Welcome back to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we just had a canapé.
Yes.
Yeah, also very gay. Uh-huh. All right. Now, we want to talk about moving away from food, because I'm sure everyone listening on, you know, their nice drive home and where they're talking about, you know, succotash and potatoes and mimosas, and you're thinking, oh, shush. Okay, right. We are going to move our attention now to the University of Windsor.
Okay.
Their Pride Centre is in Windsor, Ontario. Their Pride Centre had a hate-driven vandalism on its front door. Not just on one occasion, which is never... Like, hate vandalism is never okay.
Okay.
It's definitely not okay twice, and it sure as heck is not okay 3 days in a row. So there's a hate vandalism. We're not going to define exactly what that is. We don't want to create the impetus for copycats.
Mm-hmm.
But they covered it up. The next day, boom, back again. The third day, boom, back again. Now,
was it the same thing each time?
There's slight variations. They were a tiny bit creative, at least, you know.
Oh, so they're like, I can improve on what I did yesterday.
Yeah. Build character. But yeah, so there is the University Students Alliance at Windsor is looking at what they can do about it. I believe the alliance is obviously students. I think there's some faculty, some other various representatives from across the university there.
Mm-hmm.
But they're looking about what they can do. I actually quite agree with their approach. They're doing research.
Okay.
They are inviting the students at the University of Windsor to fill out their about 15-minute needs assessment.
Okay.
So instead of saying the university absolutely must do A, B, and C, well, they're asking the students, tell us, what do you need? And then it turns out they'll just pick the top three. But they're also asking the administration to put a little bit of money where their mouth is. They would like a full-time position for someone to support LGBTQ students across the whole campus. One paid position for what is potentially about a tenth of the student body.
Okay.
Makes sense. The position's role is maybe not yet defined. And it's not like they've been asking for this out of the blue in the last week or two since these hate incidents happened. They've been asking for this for a little while. The administration has just been not as forthcoming as people would like. But Sebastian...
Mm-hmm.
What role does a gay, queer centre of some sort play? A pride centre, LGBTQ centre, a GSM space, you know, actually when we were at university, we were there at the same time.
Yeah.
I think it went through like five different rebranded names. It was a bit much.
So it depends on what era of history you're looking at, but the broad idea is that it is a space for LGBT students to go and meet each other. In the 90s and aughties, I think people would refer to the aughties, because there were fewer people who were out and there was less social acceptance, it was a safe space. So at that time, because I've been in university since, you know, the 1430s.
Exactly.
The general trend at that time was to put the space somewhere where...
In the deepest, darkest recesses of the building.
Yeah, and it wasn't some kind of a shame thing. It was so that you could go there without prying eyes noticing you walking in.
I think a part of it was it's a spot that's not a prime spot.
Some of it maybe, you know what I mean? But it was also like the one at McMaster that I went to when I was there. It was in the oldest building on campus. It was a beautiful old stone and brick building from like the 1900s, early 1900s.
You were there when they laid the foundation.
Yeah, I was there when they laid the foundation. But it was there because it was somewhere. It was on the top floor of a building where nobody ever goes to the top floor, and it had a really nice view. But it was out of the way and. Nobody went there unless they were going to there.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually there kind of came this trend that it should be more out in the open so that if anything happened, you'd have more witnesses, the security could get there faster.
People can find it.
And after a while, the sort of general trend was, if you're going to put it somewhere near another spot that has high traffic of people who are probably going to be accepting. So if you have like a women's health center, for example,
yeah,
you know, you'd put the queer center and the women's health center together because the women's health center is going to get a lot of foot traffic. So maybe
the international student center might be nearby, you know,
yeah,
the club's office.
The club's office, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. McMaster was near the newspaper,
mm-hmm.
the campus newspaper, and everyone there was accepting, but it was also 24/7. People were constantly in the newspaper office. Well, yeah. Maybe not 24/7, but they were there up until midnight most days working on editing and whatnot, so they could keep an eye on the space.
Mm-hmm.
And,
or rather, there was no opportunity for unseen,
yeah,
entry. I want to take a little bit of a quick step back here, because okay. You mentioned it being a safe space, and we glazed
yeah.
right through that. I think that they appreciate when an element of your identity goes from being in the minority within the crowd
yeah.
to being within the majority of a crowd.
Yeah.
So women in a women's only space. You know, if you are a fan of hockey, the environment at a hockey arena versus, you know, your boardroom, very different vibes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm trying to contextualize it for non-minorities here. Mm-hmm. But even like the Muslim Student Association at Carlton, they had a great space. You mm-hmm. know, like there are lots and lots of different ways at universities and colleges where they gather folks, birds of a feather,
yeah.
to create a dynamic where they become the majority and mm-hmm. not the minority, and therefore it becomes a safer space just by virtue of the cultural acceptance of what happens within that space.
Well, it's also just a collecting place because quite a few people who go to university, they live on campus away from their families.
Mm-hmm.
And they just need a social network from when they're away from their hometowns, from their families, from the friends they grew up with. They kind of need a space to kind of quickly meet people and build a network, because if not, I mean, this is one of the reasons why universities invest in this kind of thing, by the way, is that grades go down if you're lonely and depressed all the time.
Yeah.
So it is to the benefit of the school, and they can graduate more people and make themselves look better, not to be cynical, but it is to their benefit.
I'm very cynical. I don't think the university funded the Pride Center at Carlton. I think that was student funded.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I there was no money from the administration on that. But I also think it creates a space where the community can gather and respond. You know, I recall being in the room when there a young gentleman in Ottawa passed away, took his life.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact it had in the community was immediate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a space where everyone was sharing a very similar reaction to that. We also, you know, you got all and sundry passing through. I would see first-year students or even, you know, PhD students coming in where the very first time in their entire lives where they're even wanting to see what their queerness is,
yeah.
is going through that door.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not a gay bar. It's not, you know, whatever. It's going into a space distinctly for the community. It plays such a huge role.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm emphasizing all of this.
Yeah.
Because if your front door to that space has a hate slur on it,
mm-hmm.
how it defiles, it unnerves,
yeah.
it's the organizers of the space have to say, like, we can't have people come yeah. because we can't provide any security.
Like, I would say it's a mixed reaction, because for some people it'll galvanize them, and for others it'll chase them away. But the thing is that's very individualistic and personality driven. Whereas
I'm going back to that first year student
yeah.
who's exploring their sexuality. They've plucked up the courage to find the Pride Center,
mm-hmm.
and it's got a hate slur on the front door. Like, how devastating would that
well,
be?
Well, yeah, but still, if they're headstrong, they'll see that and they'll just, it'll embolden them even more. But again, that's individualistic and personality driven.
I think it could be.
That's not good for the community as a whole. There will be individuals where that will give them, you know, the fire you know, but that's not, it's not fair to everyone. I mean, I'm not defending it. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
It's not universally as bad as it sounds, but it is a bad thing.
This is why the University of Windsor students in particular are up in arms. It's not just that this one door had a bit of hate speech on it. It's that this is a spot where students can relax, take their mind off, you know, and that's no longer the option. That safety has been taken away.
Yeah.
I think they're going about, they're reacting to it in the best possible way.
I would disagree with research, that, actually.
Asking for support.
Yeah.
You know, it making decisions based on what the student body collectively needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it, because I've seen some reactions to, from the gay community, and it's like, oof, we'll not have done it that way. But I'm pretty impressed with how University of Windsor is approaching this.
I think one of the most important things, because from what I understand, one of the solutions they're proposing is having a full-time...
And as somebody funded by the administration to work on the priorities collectively of those students.
So I don't think what any university needs is yet another administrator.
You don't think they need more bureaucrats?
I think what they need to do, they or almost all of them, if not all of them, already have a diversity office of some kind. Get someone who's already employed in that office the portfolio of overlooking that kind of thing. The other thing is that every campus already has security. Make them do their job.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really more a matter of take the resources you already have and make them do their jobs in a way that is better. I don't think hiring yet another bureaucrat is going to fix it.
I disagree because I feel that if someone's doing it on the side of their desk, where if it's not their priority or their focus...
That's what I'm saying. Get someone who's already there and give them the portfolio of being in charge. Make it so that if anything happens, the buck stops with them.
Which I feel like is not that far away from hiring somebody for that explicit purpose.
Yeah, but there's also... I don't know, administrators. Have you seen administrators working? A lot of them,
We don't have very fond feelings towards academic administration. Like, it's not...
Well, even then, like, I've done temp work for the government before, and you can see that there are people in the government who work very hard, partly because they're compensating for the person sitting next to them who's on Facebook all day.
I mean, it makes me think, you mentioned the government, of the LGBTQ secretariat.
Okay.
Now, the purpose of this office is just to have the queer Canadians as their priority. It's the lens by which they view everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very helpful in that way, you know, but...
I think the secretariat is the right response. I think that if there was a whole ministry dedicated to it, I think that'd be a bit much. But a secretariat, really fundamentally, they're there to do research to make sure that, like, they're the center point between, like, heritage and StatsCan and the tax folks and policing to make sure that everything that has to do with the community in Canada, there is that central point that gathers all that information and says, okay, is the left hand talking to the other? If they do, they're talking through the secretariat. So I think that's a good approach. I don't think a ministry.
I mean, the only ministry I really support is that of magic, but the sticking to the LGBTQ secretariat for just a hot minute.
Yeah.
They recently, just last week, had the groundbreaking for, I think it's called Thunderclap or Thundercloud.
Thunderhead.
Yeah. There we go. I knew it was Thunder something. Which is the LGBTQ Purge Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, yet another memorial site in downtown Ottawa. But it is the one being designed for the government and the Defense Department's horrific history of ousting queer folks just for their queer identity over decades. The groundbreaking happened at that. I believe that Prime Minister Trudeau himself was in attendance along with folks who had been impacted by the purge. The LGBTQ secretariat was in presence. It's been a while. We've been talking about Thunderhead for a little while now. I'm surprised that it's taken as long as it has, but they broke the ground and hopefully we'll see that memorial coming up in the next 50 years. So, yeah, that's my goal.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We will keep an eye on that and other news as it develops. I believe that was the gist of the Canadian news. Actually, we are monitoring what's happening out in Woodstock. I was thinking of reaching out to the mayor of Woodstock, who has advocated for her transparency and her availability, but she seems to have, at every possible opportunity, essentially, I'm paraphrasing here, told the media to sod off. So that's the that's the approach there. Woodstock recently made a decision. Actually, I think it was in November. We talked about it at the time, mm-hmm. to only have municipal and tourism flags in their town. They reiterated it recently when the Rainbow Alliance, which is an LGBTQ organization that serves the area, mm-hmm. Reached out to see if they could have an exception.
Yeah.
Turns out that exception is not remotely being entertained, and the mayor believes that we should be focusing on the local basketball game instead.
Okay.
So we will be monitoring the issue about the pride flags, not necessarily the basketball game in Woodstock.
Well, the number, and this is something I keep coming back to, if City Hall chooses to run the pride flag or not run the pride flag up there, flagpole during Pride season, I think that is a debate. It's something that I refuse to debate, is whether or not they permit or allow the local business associations to run Pride flags on their own shops or along like light posts and things like that during Pride season.
Yeah.
I think if they block that, you've got a serious issue.
Yeah, they're not blocking that. But yeah. Really, the argument was being made that the Rainbow Alliance had not been contacted. I think that's a bit naive to think that a local city council is going to personally reach out and contact you.
Yes.
You need to be on top of it. The fact that, I mean, they're politicians. My expectations are very low.
Well, it's also, are you going to think of every single thing? Everyone you could speak to and then...
They are. Rainbow Alliance is the community advocates for the area that has spoken specifically about pride flags.
Yeah.
If you were going to talk to anyone about it, it would have been them. So the fact that they were omitted from the conversation is, you know, a bit of a faux pas. But also to be expected to be contacted is also maybe a little naive. So who knows? But the mayor and the council would much rather just not talk about it at all and instead talk about the local basketball game. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where it goes from there. All right, we are playing our next track, which is... North American Martyrs, I've got the thing written down behind me. Give me a second here. So North American Martyrs by Funeral Lakes, and we will be back just...
Here comes my saviors, dressed in black. They carry paper and make the maps, he said. The Son of God is in your heart. Some
welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer medium. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
We are just about out of time, but I did want to let you know that we are keeping an eye on Seoul, South Korea.
Okay.
As there's been a political shift in the winds there, and progressives are now somewhat in the majority. Does this mean that LGBT protections that have been languishing for decades could be rolled out? Who knows? We will see. We're also disappointed about what we're hearing in Iraq. I think we mentioned the anti-gay legislation that came into effect last week. But you had a story about the Methodists?
Yes. Some of the North American indigenous Protestant churches, because there's, you know, the Church of England in Canada is the Anglican Church. You've got the Methodists. There's a few Baptists. But anyway, a lot of these churches are starting to drop their internal regulations against sanctifying same-sex marriages or allowing openly gay or lesbian priests to serve. A lot of them are focusing on gay and lesbian. They're a little bit behind the curve when it comes to bisexuals existing, and trans is a little bit too far for them at this point in time in history. But the Methodist Church recently had a vote, and it was more than a supermajority. It was a, I believe, 6-1 vote in favor of allowing the sanctification of same-sex marriages and of allowing openly gay priests to serve. So, big change there. The Christian right isn't as right as it used to be. At least some Christian.
Exactly.
Anyway.
it's definitely a move in the right direction, and we'll keep an eye on that as it goes. Now, we do monitor a lot of international news. We don't always get around to it, unfortunately. But I did also want to note, the BBC did a really great documentary recently looking at how in Nigeria, particularly in areas where the anti-gay legislation has been pretty rough.
Yeah, in East Africa.
Exactly. They are finding more and more men who are victims of entrapment, abuse, and being lured over gay dating sites. So much so that this is becoming endemic that the South African government has now issued a warning to queer folks in South Africa about this practice of inviting people in. And I believe that there are now forums online where people discuss some of their dates and some of things of where they are, just to share safety and sort of verify, is this a real person or is this a trap? Mm-hmm. There was one story of a guy who went to a house. There was three men. The other two appeared to be a couple as well. He was there to meet the third. The two that were purportedly in a couple go off to a bedroom to do whatever it is that they do. He starts to relax. They rush back in, beat the living bejeebus out of him.
Ooh.
It's pretty grim stuff. But yeah, we'll keep an eye on all of these stories and more as they develop. We are playing out with a track that I really enjoy, actually. You were saying it was giving Jack Everett's Bad Things
vibes.
It's giving that sort of gothic
western
gothic swag, I think, is a good sort of vibe for it. All right, this is
but with a lady.
Yes, this is Dark Water. Ooh, good name. By Talon. We'll be back next week. I've been Luke Smith,
and I've been Sebastian, and thank you for listening.
I was always afraid losing my way in dark, dark water. Left in the way, just another mistake of a wayward daughter. She pulled me out of the river and threw me into the sea. She pulled me out of the river and into the deep. friends.